Great minds do not think alike. Great minds think for themselves.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 3rd of April 2014. Coming to you from the spit-polished GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. And here from Houston is the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Good morning, everyone, and good morning, Barris Bartlett.
Good morning, mate. Did you have a good sleep?
Don't start with me.
Okay. And if you want to know what that's about, just listen to the very tail end of the show.
Gospel revolution.
You're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues. Why don't you listen to the gospel revolution.
Michael, this week I thought we'd kick off with a nice quote from that wonderful preaching healing man, that TV evangelist, Benny Hinn.
Now listen to me. The Christian life is a life of surrender, total commitment, total surrender. If it's not a life of total surrender and total commitment, it's not a Christian life.
Well,
what do you think about that?
I know kind of how Benny lives, and I'm, you know, if living in $10 million mansions is a life of total surrender, I surrender all.
He doesn't do that, does he?
He doeth. And having private jets and goodness. Wearing the most expensive suits and watches. If that's total surrender, I'm ready for it today.
Yeah, I say bring it on.
Gospel Revolution.
Michael, this week we had a story from www.christianheadlines.com. I guess that's got something to do with Christians. And it says that in the, the Sultanate, I guess, of Brunei, that 19 words have been currently banned, and those, if you're not a Muslim, and this is, let's just headline this, this is in the section, you might be a fundamentalist if you, yeah, according to the Brunei Times, Asian Sharia nation Brunei has banned non-Muslims from using 19 religious words associated with Islam. Christianity Today reports that the banned words include believer, prayer, the Quran, and God. Now, the word, of course, in Arabic is Allah, but Allah is a generic term for God. It's not the Muslim
right.
God. It's, you know, if you have, if an Islamic man was describing the many gods of Greece, he would say they had many Allahs. But apparently, you can't use the word God unless, of course, you're Muslim, because I guess the name God in a heathen's or a heretic's or a whoever it is mouth doesn't sound so good to them. 19 words, mate. Maybe you might be a fundamentalist if you ban words.
Well, you know, there's never any end to the idiocy of the way people try to express that they are different than everybody else. You know, when salvation is marked by a change in a person's life or a difference in their life, then you've got to come up with something that makes you different. And the odd thing about it is that none of those things are indications of being redeemed. Redemption, and of course, as we understand it and teach it and share it as much as we can, is that which has been done to and for the entire human race by and only by God and Christ in the redemption of the whole world. So what you look like, what you talk like, what words you use or don't use, are none of these things are determining factors in the ability to identify a redeemed person. So Christianity, though...
Hang on. Just say that again, mate.
There are no words to identify a redeemed person.
Is there anything you can use? I mean, you know, do they look cross-eyed at you?
There is nothing. You can't tell by the way they dress whether or not they are redeemed. You cannot tell by the color of skin. You cannot tell by their abilities lack thereof.
Are you saying people who are black could be redeemed just like you and me?
As redeemed as everyone else.
Yellow people?
And red and yellow, black and white.
Everything is beautiful in its own way, like a starry summer night or a snow-covered winter's day. And everybody's beautiful in their own way, under God's head. Must not close our minds. We must let our thoughts be free. For every hour passes by, you know the world gets a little bit older. It's time to realize that the beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. Summer night or a snow-covered Wednesday. Sing it, children.
Everybody's beautiful.
Everybody's beautiful. In their own way. Oh, in their own way. And under God's heaven, the world's gonna find a way. We shouldn't care about the length of his hair, the color of his skin. Don't worry about what shows from without, but the love that lives within. We gonna get it all together now. Everything gonna work out fine. Just take a little time. Look on the good side, my friend. Straighten it out in your mind.
Ray Stevens got it right.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
So here he is, the fundamental difference between the gospel and all religions on the earth is all religions on the earth say that if you have salvation or you have redemption or any combination of those two words at all in any degree, that it is going to have an external effect in the way and you know, the way you talk, the way you the words you use, the clothes you wear, the hat you wear, the dress you wear, the place you live, how you live, the colors that you have are allowed to put on, the colors that are lack thereof of your car, whether you have a TV or don't have a TV, whether or not you listen to secular music or you listen to nothing but Christian music. All of these are external things.
But surely an orange tree gives oranges. Didn't Jesus even say, by their fruit you'll know them?
Yes, he did. And he said that pertaining to prophets of his day, that there were a lot of false prophets running around. And he said you'd know them by their fruit. Well, the only way that you can know a prophet by his fruit is to whether or not his prophecies come true or not.
So what are the fruits of redemption?
The fruit of redemption is righteousness.
Well, so if I look at someone and they act unrighteous, they're not redeemed. And if they act righteous, they're redeemed, right?
Oh, good news, Barris. No.
Oh, okay. We started real early in this program, didn't we? You want to cut me off at the knees and then just make point at me and laugh to all your friends. I know what you want to do.
Yes. Good news. No. That is the power of this gospel, is that the redeemed are identified by God and his opinion, not by each other. That's why judging each other on the basis of spiritual matters, especially based on spiritual matters, is just so ridiculous. But see, when we are deplete of the knowledge and the understanding of what righteousness really is, righteousness is not a performance. It's not an act. It's not what you do. Righteousness is a condition. It is a solid relationship that has resulted in God and man being one.
If the Bible is all about Jesus, don't you think that most churches would mention him with at least the same frequency as they mention all of their favorite dogmas and doctrine and all those rules of your particular brand of religion? Tithing, moralism, Old Testament law, abortion, gays, politics, all hail the leader. Persecution, the end times, don't forget the bloody rules. God's perfect will for your life, fleeing youthful lusts. Rock music, speaking in tongues, the coming kingdom, worldliness and how to escape. But those pesky rules, don't forget them. Heresy, prophecy, soul-winning missions, offerings, wrong doctrine, right doctrine. And don't forget all those bloody rules. Relationships, long hair, short hair, dyed hair, liberalism, greasy grace, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, dispensationalism, and rules, rules, never-ending bloody rules. And Calvinism, Arminianism, a missionary service, Sunday school, swearing and cussing, besetting sins, sexual purity. Oh, and give us some more rules, won't you? False prophets, confession, dress code, mixed swimming, dancing, movies, television, dating. Oh, and did I mention the freaking rules?
Gospel Revolution.
Let me bring up something that happened this morning on Facebook. I wrote something and I just said, gospel revolutionaries, the best way to recognize all you are is to listen to your heart. Live your life the way your heart guides you, not how others want you to. Never, never, never forget this simple truth. Jesus, God in man's form, himself, promised that the Holy Spirit would lead you into all truth. Listen to your heart and trust yourself, and now let your voice be heard. And Robert Wahini, I hate it when people, like, they they've got different opinions, but they don't want to speak out because this is Mike's talking or this is Jeff talking. And I loved Robert for writing this. He said, yes, but what about the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked? Who can know it? And I wrote back this, and he seemed to like it, but I'd love to get your comments on it. And it was, this was a big one for me as well. After all, it got drummed into us every other Sunday. Under the law in which Jeremiah operated, this was surely true. Jesus achieved something that never existed in the days of Jeremiah. God could only reside in the praises of his people back then. That was the nearest he could get to a people whose sense of failure was so great as to create a gulf that even God could not bridge. In this scenario, the heart is indeed desperately wicked, resorting to all manner of self-justification, self-flagellation, self-examination, self-righteousness. But now Christ in us, the hope of glory, and us in Christ, the one God has always planned, is here, Emmanuel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how freeing. It was once all about me, now it is all about Jesus. His justification as compared to self-justification, his righteousness as opposed to self-righteousness, his purity as opposed to our self-examination. Remember how they had to carefully examine the sacrifice to ensure it had no blemish. And his being whipped instead of my self-flagellation. Hallelujah. I think I want to speak in tongues.
you and me both. Excellent answer. That was an absolute truth that was resolved at the cross. And knowing the difference between before and after the cross is the ability to understand the gospel.
Now, and say that again, mate, because, and I'm asking you to repeat this. We all don't get it, but because every Sunday, back in the day, we had this mixture of lead and gold, of law and grace, of old and new, and it was all just mixed together in such a way that our brains just presumed it, and even now our filters still take it in as being what it used to be.
This is very true, and thus the massive confusion and the inability to read, even to read something in context. But the ability to separate before the cross and after the cross is the ability to understand the gospel itself and the reality of the work of the cross. There are things that existed and were in place and ways that existed before the cross. And then there is a whole new world. And see, I think, Barris, the reason we missed it so comprehensively is that we really fail to see the gravity of this difference. That's why we have missed this. We have failed to allow the difference of before the cross and after the cross to speak to us at all. I remember finally realizing that everything that Jesus said, now this is just how stupid this all was. I realized that the cross was the most powerful thing that could possibly have happened on this planet. But it was an odd little day, the day that I realized everything that Jesus said, except after his resurrection, but everything that Jesus said when he was walking and teaching and healing sick people and speaking parables, that all of that was before the cross.
We're doing a resurrection special, and or as I call it, the Ishtar special, and we're going to do that in about 3 weeks. And one thing I accuse people of is not thinking for themselves, in that we are going to explain how people don't actually believe what Jesus said. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who have touched mm-hmm. themselves, but they still have two hands. Hello, where did they cut the hand off? They've looked at a woman, but they still have both eyes. What we do is we call him a good and wise teacher. And if he is who he said he was, he's neither good nor is he wise.
Mm-hmm.
But if we look at it as a different, please forgive this word, dispensation, as a different time before and after the cross, are you telling me that virtually nothing that Jesus said is worth listening to?
No, I'm telling you everything Jesus said is priceless.
So how come you got two eyes?
Because of the cross.
How come you got two hands?
Because of the cross.
Okay, please expand on that for us, because I'd like you to put your foot in it rather than me.
Well, before the cross, these were the requirements of the law. This was this would have been the thing that we have to, that Jesus said, this is the full heart and the intent of the law.
So as a man, and I'm speaking to men here, now you girls, just remember the gossip comes under the same deal, okay? Just remember that. But I'm speaking to men because men are, well, more known for this. I don't know a man who would say, I never looked at another human and did not, at one time or other, have lust.
Mm. Sure.
And yet, I haven't seen one man walking around with one arm. And if he is, he says, yes, it was Iraq, you know. Yeah, I lost it in Vietnam.
Exactly.
He never says, well, what do you know? You know, I was looking a bit of porn and had to cut my hand off.
And I had to respond to the altar call. Yeah. And, altar calls would be quite amazing if we followed Jesus's protocol for an altar call. As far as sin is concerned, Jesus didn't say, if you've done these things, walk forward, confess it to the pastor, or go to the little box and open the door and sit and confess it to the priest. Jesus said, pluck out your eye and cut off your arm. So,
So you have not obeyed Jesus in this?
Jesus fulfilled all of the law.
No, hey, hang on. This is only a simple yes or no. It's like, have you stopped beating your wife yet? Michael, I'm going to go with, you have felt lust sometime in your life.
Yeah, once or twice.
And you still have both eyes. So
yes,
didn't.
I do.
So you do not follow the teachings of Jesus.
No, I did not follow the teachings of Jesus.
It's hard to get it out of you. It's like drawing teeth, mate. But I tell you what, I'm so enjoying having done once that I just want to – give me a minute here to enjoy this, will you?
And that is the thing about the teachings of Christ, is that we have this incredible reality to be so grateful for, that the teachings of Christ were indeed teachings that were based in the law and the prophets. They had to follow up on what the law said. All of his teachings had to follow up on what the prophets forecast. And Jesus did tell both sides of the prophets that there was a salvation coming, but he also was saying there was a judgment coming.
Okay, so when Robert Wahine and I were having that discussion this morning about the heart being deceitful above all things, how do we take that now? How do we take that scripture now and relate it to our lives now?
Well, it's not just how we relate to our lives. It's how we relate to everyone else. And it changes the fundamental way that we see ourselves and the way that we would see others, is that the heart is not wicked. It's not fundamentally bad. It is fundamentally good.
But this is the Bible. Are you saying it's wrong?
No, I'm saying that the Bible is exactly right.
Am I interrupting you too much?
Yes, you are.
Okay, this is a photograph of me shutting up.
Well, you did that about 15 minutes ago when your video stopped working.
Oh, dang it.
And your mouth is wide open, actually. So.
I am so sorry.
I've been waiting to tell you, but...
Yeah, well, no wonder you didn't see me putting my hand up.
No wonder I'm not listening to you.
How about that?
There you are. He has returned. He said he would.
Okay. All right. The second thing.
You think we've finished that one?
You take it now.
Okay. But yes, the reality of the teachings of Christ being fulfilled, the prophets being fulfilled. Why are the teachings of Christ fulfilled? Because the teachings of Christ are the law and the Psalms and the prophets. That's what he was teaching on when he arrived here. And he said that he came to fulfill the law and the Psalms and the prophets. So Jesus, in the clearest way that I could say it, fulfilled his own teaching. He fulfilled his own words that came out of his own mouth. And that, for the world, is good news. And it is, Barris, something you mentioned just a little bit earlier. It is interesting that all of the religions of the world will say that Jesus was a good teacher. Remember when we did the study on mystics and Buddhism, and they all had honorable mentions about what Jesus had to say, but were very selective about what they quoted him as saying. And the nice thing about it is with the gospel, we don't have to be selective about what Jesus said. We can tell you the whole part. We can give you every word that Jesus said, and then show you there's something very powerful that happened that Paul said was at a point when that we all died together, that we all died together in Christ. And the same as Christ was raised up from the dead, we were raised up together also. That's in so many of Paul's writings. And Ephesians chapter 2 is as good as it gets when Paul is talking about that subject.
This week, Michael the Pope did something which amazed me. He decided to announce the members of a sex abuse commission, and this commission looks really amazing because one of the people who are at the top of it is an Irish woman who was abused by a priest as a child. Have we got a prophecy book? Can we have a prophecy book? Can you write in the prophecy book for me? Let's call it the Red Book, and here is my first prophecy. Let
me jot it down for you.
Goodo. You got it out?
We got it.
Okay. All right, here we go. This Pope is going to die prematurely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This Pope is amazing, mate. He's also he's devalued the worth of job description of the 2IC, the second in charge, the Secretary of State of the Vatican. And he has also, he's done other stuff this week. I mean, it's just pretty amazing. But one of the people he put in charge of this was a fella he was an Aussie. Now, this guy surprised me because this guy went up in an Australian, over there we don't have congressional inquiries, we have royal commissions. And he said, sorry, my closest advisors were wrong in the evidence they've given to you. This guy is standing up and saying, now, it should be said for the skeptics that he waited a long time to do it, but he is sorry about the handling of the sex abuse case of altar boys. Now, Australia has had every bit as serious an ongoing problem with this whole child abuse in the Catholic Church thing. And I'm amazed by this Pope at what he's doing.
Yes, this is the right thing to do. I've always spoken up about these guys, not just the popes, but also the preachers in America and around the world. But I can tell you that I could only hope that all of the religions of the world would develop this sense of equity that this pope has. The ability to deal with things as if all things were equal. And that seems to be the position that he's coming from. If all things are equal, then this is what we do. If all things are equal, then we accept gay people. If all things are equal, and the list just keeps going on. Now, he doesn't make that statement, if all things are equal. But that is, if you take the decisions that he's made, even from the way that he lives. Now, you're going to think I'm Catholic by the time I finish talking about the guy, but I'm not. But he has chosen a life that would at least be more like just the average person there in Italy. So this decision to deal with this problem in Catholicism, I hope, carries weight throughout the world, because as I've also spoken up about, the need that this planet has for a child to be able to be raised without being touched sexually until they become a consenting adult should be top priority for all of us. There's so many messed up lives simply because children have been touched. And I wish touched would be a sufficient enough word, but people are going to have to just know that that is inclusive of all of the horrible, nightmarish things that children go through when adults decide to use a child's body as an instrument of their sexual desires. And anything, I'll stand up for this pope or anybody else who has the voice to be able to reach out and to say something needs to be done about this. And not only something needs to be done, we are doing something about it. So every joke I ever made about a Catholic priest, every joke I ever made, when it comes to this guy, I'm in his corner as far as the decisions that he's making in respect to this and so many other things.
The news report that I'm referring to says when he was elected a year ago, Pope Francis promised to shake up. Now, last week we remarked on the fact that Pope Francis is a Jesuit, and yet he is taking his name from another order, the Franciscans.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Interesting. He promised to shake up the bureaucracy of the world's smallest country. He started at the top, curbing the once overarching role of the Secretary of State. The Cardinal, who oversees the Vatican relations with other countries, has served as a top-ranking official in the Holy See's bureaucracy since the 17th century. That's the 1600s. This means over very close to 450 years of tradition is being changed about. And in recent decades, the office accumulated increasing authority over finances and job hires, taking on roles analogous to Prime Minister and the Chief of Staff in the Papal Court, as well as that of top diplomat. Now, over the reign of the retired Pope Benedict, there was a lot of criticism levelled at the Vatican and even the Pope. And it goes on to say, now, however, Francis is reducing the power of the job, reshaping the department as one primarily involved in diplomacy like the US State Department or foreign ministries elsewhere, stripping it of authority over finances. Now, this is at the same time as he has made the point, and he's done it very publicly. The Vatican Bank will no longer have the power to embarrass the Vatican. It's pretty interesting because we've seen people hung dead under bridges in London. Very odd things that have happened to Vatican bankers. And Francis is now saying enough is enough, or at least it looks like he is.
Mm-hmm.
He chose a frugal, publicity-shy... Get this, mate. This is the guy he's replacing this fellow with. He's chosen a frugal, publicity-shy career diplomat, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, who, according to those who know him, is the antithesis of his most recent predecessors in the post. And then he is a new department overseeing Vatican finances will now report directly to the Pope to head it. Francis chose an Australian who'd never worked in Rome, Cardinal George Pell, a man far removed from the Italian-dominated Curia. Tectonic shifts.
Well, and that is what's happening within the Catholic Church, and these are good things. And again, our compliments to Pope Francis. If I saw someone making these decisions and I knew they knew the gospel, I would say it's because they know the gospel that they're making these decisions. Now, I don't know that that is the case with Pope Francis, but, you know, even him being a Jesuit, he disappointed the Jesuits, as you said, by taking a Franciscan name. And it seems like on every point where people would be able to claim points based on who they are as opposed to somebody else and being better than, he just seems to just knock the props out from that every time.
Well, the Jesuits are the group to whom is accredited the saying, give us a child till they're 7 years old and we will, and I will give you the man. Or give us a child till they're 7 years old and we have them the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And this man is apparently so different than that.
Yes. And I don't know, nor do I understand all of the different sects of Catholicism. I do know that they are as varied as they are in Protestantism. I don't know that they have as many denominations in Catholicism. If you're talking about these different orders in Protestantism, we wouldn't call it a different order. We'd call it a different denomination.
Well, the difference is in Catholicism, an order must be authorized. In Protestantism, you know,
mm-hmm.
who's going to authorize? Where's a Protestant pope?
Exactly, yes. So these are good things, and far be it from me to say that the doctrine of the Catholic Church. Now, if we start talking about what the doctrine of the Catholic Church has been on all of these centuries, I can turn red in the face and insult everything about Catholicism from the beginning all the way through. But if we're going to take the decisions that this Pope has made, at least the ones I know of. I don't know of all of his decisions. I'm not watching the Catholic Network every day. I'm not sure that too many of the Catholics are that excited about announcing the decisions of this Pope. They seem to be quite stymied as to, you know, how do you offer this perfect loyalty to the Pope, and when you have had this perfect that perfect loyalty seemed to be connected with a doctrine that was very divisive, and now you have to hold absolute loyalty to this person who does not hold those views. So I've watched them scramble for words. I remember seeing interviews even when he was first appointed and them trying to explain what was going on, and they just had no words. They just had no words. It was very difficult for them.
Yeah, no, it was he would come out and say something. He'd say, black is black, and then all of the explainers would come out and say, well, he didn't actually mean black is black. What he meant was that black was actually a very light shade of gray. It was quite amusing seeing them try to reinterpret his words in the light of previous understandings. Following up on a story from last week, Michael, it appears that Ulf Ekman, the founder of the largest Pentecostal group in Sweden, and up until a couple of weeks ago, the second in charge of Yonggi Cho's biggest Pentecostal church in the world in South Korea, His conversion to Catholicism that he publicized last week came as a result of a video that was shown at the last Kenneth Copeland Pastors Conference, in which Pope Francis said, "We must come together."
Amazing.
Yep, I only had one word for it too, mate.
I mean, everyone makes those types of statements, but then to say that you have to abandon your own way of thinking to come together to go to someone else's way of thinking is just, well, it shows where religion takes us. You've got to jump into one camp or out of the other camp. And the amazing thing about the gospel revolution is that we have so many people that have varying and differing opinions. Hey, listen, I will proclaim what I believe and what I think the gospel to be as long as I have breath to do it. But for people to realize that that translates into you think for yourself, that is a huge thing to accomplish. This gospel message is, it has very clear borders to it. We lay down a line. We draw the line. We draw the perimeters and the parameters of this gospel and what we think it is, and we make it clear. And it is so clear that, as I've stated before, that I woke up to the fact a few years ago that when I answer questions, I don't have to say if and but or maybe, and hadn't said it in years. Now, you would think that that would lead to, since we have got this all down so good, that it would lead to the need to make sure that everybody thinks exactly the same way, or says it the same way.
Well, that is the human way of doing things. If we're gonna have a group who is powerful, then we must all move in the same direction with the same mind, using the same words and the same memes. Yeah, if you look at politics, that's how it works. If you look at dog shows, that's how it works. If you look at if you look at any group of people who achieve anything of any significance, isn't that how it works, Michael?
That's the way it has worked in the past, and that's why that all of this gospel revolution truly is a revolution. It's a revolution of thought and a revolution in the way that some would exercise that thought, because the culmination of the communication of the gospel is that someone now is free to think for themselves. I've
now,
told
but,
this.
But that means that they're going to go in different directions, and we're not going to be able to, you know, get a membership fees, and we're going to be always broke, and
kind of seems to be that way. But I remember years ago, and evidently this was a supernatural intervention, because my daughter does not remember this at all. But she was no more than 7 years old, and she and I were doing something, and we happened to say the same thing at the same time. You know how those little coinkydinks can take place, and I said, "Look at that, Audrey! Isn't that amazing?" I says, "Great minds do think alike." And if you knew my daughter, she's 27 years old and now expecting my grandson, actually, which will be here in late May. She put her hands on her hips and cocked her head to the side, rolled her eyes. It's a very Williams thing that she learned very much early on. She rolled her eyes at me and said, "Dad, great minds do not think alike. Great minds think for themselves." And
just say that again, mate. I want to take it for an intro.
"Dad, great minds do not think alike. Great minds think for themselves." So I realized that she was telling the truth, even though to this day she tells me she does not remember it. And Barris, I believe in people. I really do.
But they've hurt you so badly.
They have hurt me very badly in many cases. But let me tell you what the gospel has done for me. I am so convinced that the gospel has created good hearts in everyone, that even when all of that goes wrong for whatever reasons and people wind up being very hurtful to me or to others, I still have it in me that the next person that I meet, I fully trust. Now, I know that this is not the normal way to live, but this is the way that I live my life. I fully trust everybody I meet. Now, I didn't realize that I did that, but I do. And if I do not trust someone, it's because I learn not to trust them. It's not because I start out from a position of distrust.
Is that like learning racism?
Well, I think it is, and I think that that is just a product of the gospel that puts us in that place to where that we believe the best. You know, we believe whatsoever things are good and pure, you know, that whole chapter, you know.
Yeah, but that can't be true because that also says that love believes all things. You don't believe all things.
I don't know what that means. So.
Well, you know, you would believe that people who, surely you'd believe that people who had your worst interests at heart, you'd believe that they had your best interests at heart, wouldn't you? If you believed all things?
Yes, and I do.
How do we relate that to life, to, you know, living every day?
Well, again, it's a totally different way of living and to put trust. Now, let me tell you that now if people think that that means I become pacifist in my dealings with life and or the people in my life, it is far from that. I'm actually more decisive in dealing with people in my life.
I say you,
and okay. I'm associated with.
You know, it's not the people who agree with us. It's the people who question us that help us make progress. That's how we've done it since day one. What are your thoughts on what we've just been talking about? Why don't you call me on area code 234-564-0971 and let us know what you think about that. Else you can just email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. That was freedom@gospelrevolution.com. What do you think about that?
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family. Dua.
Gospel Revolution.
This week, Mike, we got a question from Moses Gata in Nakuru, Kenya. And he writes this. It's believed that Moses wrote the first five books of the law. Why was he writing as if referring to another Moses? Like, the Lord God appeared to Moses instead of the Lord God appeared to me. Also, where did Moses get the story of Genesis since he was not yet born? And also the story of his birth and being raised in Pharaoh's palace. Who told him the story so he could write? Could you explain that, please, Mike?
Number one, as far as writing, referring to himself in the third person, he certainly wouldn't be the first person who ever did that. And, well, maybe he was the first. I don't know. But there's been many since him who have written many, many things and referred to themselves in the third person.
Yeah, well, Paul said, I know a man 14 years ago who, yeah.
So we know for sure that Paul wrote the letter and Paul was writing about himself and he was talking about this man that he knew. So the issue of Moses or anyone else writing about themselves in the third person like that, it's not a concern for me. I don't think it should be a concern for anyone because it is certainly a form of writing. It's a way that people do write. As far as Moses being able to talk about his own birth, about him being able to talk about all of this history, the understanding that we have of the Jewish culture was that that's what they went through every day. I mean, instead of sitting down at a meal and praying a little ditty prayer, they most likely were going through Jewish history and repeating it and making sure it was repeated right. And so the verbal history of all of this is pretty well sealed into the heart, not just of Moses, but I would think that just about probably anyone of that culture could have written the things that Moses did if they'd have had the talents that he had, because the knowledge of it, from my understanding, would have not been just something that Moses knew. There are the stories that Moses knew, not only about himself, but about all these things. So, Varys, what do you, what would be your response to Moses?
About Moses? Oh, Moses is a ratbag, mate. What is my... Moses is one of our best friends, and we just wish that we could pile on all the shackles and love and everything that we could to our friend Moses in Nakuru, Kenya, and also Queen Elizabeth and your cow and the School of the Scriptures.
Yes.
So
I have two cows now.
You have two cows?
Yeah. My cow had a cow.
You know, in America, if I have so many dollars, I can get a citizenship for nothing. Well, for nothing. It's for all those dollars. So, and I can get a fast track green card if I come in with, I don't know, 100 grand or something. Maybe two cows in Kenya. maybe we should send you over there and try that.
I knew you were trying to get me committed to something here. So
I want your job. I just want you out of here.
Hey, all you had to do is say, go. I'm gone.
So let me answer this in anthropological terms. But just before I do, let me comment on the third person, speaking about oneself in the third person. I just did it then when I said speaking about oneself instead of speaking about myself. It is quite common in the English language, particularly amongst the upper classes or those pretending to be upper class, to speak in the third person. It's as if it makes one... I don't know, somehow better. In fact, if it was Prince Charles from England speaking, he would say, "One believes that one's experiences enhances one," or something to that effect. And he'd be really saying, "I believe that my experiences have helped me." So the third person's not uncommon in English, and it's also not uncommon in other languages. Okay, enough about the third person now. Verbal tradition is an established, accepted method of establishing accepted historicity. In other words, the concept of a verbal tradition is native to almost all Aboriginal peoples. Now, let me use an African example. The last legitimate king of the Ethiopians was Haile Selassie, whose title was Lion of the Tribe of Judah. A title he got because he was, and he was Ethiopia's regent from middle 1915 or 1916 through to just before World War II, I think, 1930. And he was called Emperor of Ethiopia from 1930 through to 1974. He was the heir to a dynasty that traced its origin by tradition from King Solomon and Queen Makeda, Empress of Aksum, known in the Abrahamic tradition as Queen of Sheba. And Haile Selassie is a defining figure in both Ethiopian and African history. Now, if you want to trace back the Ark of the Covenant, you'll find that Ethiopia is a real interesting study. If you want to trace back, and the idea is, or at least one claim is, that King Solomon passed it through his son, the son of the Queen of Sheba, through to Ethiopia. No one really knows now because it's all kind of hidden. But the thing is, and the point I'm trying to make is, that the verbal tradition is accepted in Ethiopia and outside Ethiopia as being absolutely legitimate. So now you would naturally expect that if the verbal history of Ethiopia was reliable, then it would also jibe with written histories outside of Ethiopia or verbal histories outside of Ethiopia. And as it turns out, it does. You'll remember that Ethiopia, of course, was the very first country to which the gospel went via Philip when he baptized the treasurer of Queen Candace, I think, the queen at the time of Ethiopia. And he was a convert and baptized by Philip, took the gospel back to Ethiopia. But then Ethiopia also had very strong ties back to Israel. Moses' wife, Ethiopian. Solomon's friend, shall we say, Ethiopian, Queen of Sheba. When we compare verbal histories with written histories, it is amazing how strongly they resemble each other. Not only, but also, when we are comparing Ethiopian history with Israeli history, we don't just have two histories, we have multiple exterior multiple histories of exterior civilizations that surrounded both of these countries, or had to do with both of these countries. In every single case, the verbal history of Ethiopia appears accurate, and that was handed down for generations for 4,000 years. And the only difference between a written language and a verbal, or a written history and a verbal history, is that, if anything, a verbal history is more prone to be correct.
Mm-hmm.
you know that saying that the victors write the history. The history belongs to the people who win the victory. And if you,
yes.
All you've got to do is look at it from World War, let's say the beginning of 1900, the year 1900, to now, and you know that history has been rewritten. It was rewritten by the Bolsheviks in Russia, and then after that by the communists in Russia. It's been rewritten by the Americans in North America. It's been rewritten almost in every continent. It's been rewritten. We know what it's like in the West right now. Every so many years, the education department changes up the history books. And the histories, have you noticed, they change. Now, you can't do that with a verbal history, because parents teach their children to teach their children to teach their children to teach their children. And this thing is so deeply embedded in the culture, that can't be done. Now, here's the interesting thing, and it's hard to understand from a Western mindset. In David's day, and in subsequent days, every Jewish boy before the age of 14 knew off by heart the first five books of the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing.
Do we want to say anything more about that?
No, I'm satisfied with it. We'll see if Moses is. We'll see if Moses is satisfied with Moses.
Okay. And I'll bet Moses. Now, I don't
Which
even...
Which one?
Our Moses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The real Moses. I mean, I'll bet Moses. And I'd love you to let us know about this, because this helps us know a little bit more about what we're saying. We don't want to just mouth stuff off. I would be interested to know from you, in Nakuru, what is the verbal traditions of your grandmother? Because I'm just guessing here, but I'm going to guess that your grandmother can tell you what her great 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 grandfather did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. down.
Gospel Revolution.
If you're like me and you live carefree, you do whatever you want, when you want, you love to have fun, the only thing you take serious is not taking anything serious, then you usually encounter a lot of hate. Some people hate to see other people have a good time. They hate to see other people have fun because they look at their life and they're like, you know what? I'm not having that much fun. So why is this person having so much fun? So most of the time people come up to me and say, Cliff, how do you remain so happy and so cheerful, you know, with all this hate around you? You know, so many people don't like you. So
I tell them, say, YOLO, 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 YOLO. I tell them, say, me they make my money, so I could spend my money. I don't need anyone to tell me how to spend my money. So when you make your money, make you spend your money. You don't need anyone to tell you how to spend your money. I tell them, say,
YOLO, 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 YOLO.
I tell them, say,
YOLO, 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 YOLO.
I tell them, say,
YOLO, 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 YOLO.
You only live once, so enjoy your life. I didn't enjoy my life.
Yes, YOLO, you might only live once, but you have a whole lifetime to have a good time. Alright, don't worry about what anybody thinks about you. The only thing that matters is how you feel about yourself and how good you make the people around you feel. So forget the hate and the haters. Sooner or later when they're old, they're going to look back and say, gosh, I wish I would have done this, this, this my way.
I tell them, say,
YOLO, YOLO, YOLO,
YOLO.
I tell them,
spread the religion of the rhythm of life.
So, Michael, this is the beginning of our spring pledge drive for 2014.
Yes, we did a late winter pledge drive. We delayed it until January. And so this is our on-time spring pledge drive.
Hey, did you see those certificates of pharisectomy? Have you got them yet?
I did. Yeah. Jeff just showed them to me yesterday, and they are quite nice. My goodness, you did a really good job there, Brother Bartlett.
They are going to look great up on people's walls.
I think everyone's going to be very excited to get them. There's quite a stack of them, so...
I don't know what the gifts are for this pledge drive, but I think Jeff will tell us as soon as we have some news to update. What are we putting this pledge drive towards? What are we driving for?
Well, this is a very specific and very unique pledge drive. Let me tell just the brief story of this. We were in Florida, as everyone knows, and we were in a house that one of my good friends and a person in the Gospel Revolution had let us use for more than 2 years rent-free. We were very grateful because we've not been in a place where that we would be able to afford separate rental space. But the house was sold. And we had to, in a scramble, move everything back here. I think that it would be really good for Jeff to have a home. But in talking with Jeff about having a home, he really likes to be mobile. And he's single. And I would do the same thing, I think, if I had to think about it more than twice. So what we've come up with is a plan to purchase a fifth wheel and then to purchase a truck Jeff's truck makes it to and from the convenience store to get his Diet Coke refilled every day. And I'm not sure that it would make it an inch further, to be honest with you. I've set a goal of about 25,000. I think that we can get him into a respectable RV. We actually have one RV that has been donated. We want to see, you know, where that goes is this, you know, exactly what Jeff will be using. We've accepted this donation. We'll be telling you more about it, and you're not going to be surprised who it is that has contributed this fifth wheel that they actually had there. We just need to see if it is functionally what Jeff will be eventually using.
With this now housing the office, it's going to, I guess, need to meet certain specs.
Right. And I want to contribute $1,000 toward Jeff's new home. And I want some other folks to step up. And, you know, all we'd have to have is about 20 folks right now to just call us. All we got to do is run your credit card. You don't even have to have the money. I think we're going to have a few people that are going to really want to step up to the plate and help do this. Now, the one thing it's going to do is give Jeff a home, you know, and give me my home back too. Please help me get rid of Jeff. Goodness.
Yeah,
oops, well, did I say that? Did I say that?
I know you're serious because you're ready to put a grand of your own money up.
Oh, yes. I'll mortgage the house, anything. No, Jeff and I do real well here. He has the front end of the house. I have the back end of the house. And it works just fine, really. But I'm used to having my own space. And Jeff's a grown man and needs his own space also. And the ministry needs an office. So what this will do for the ministry is secure office space free of rent for any foreseeable future, as long as Jeff is with us and has the RV or has any place. He agreed that if the ministry does this and purchases puts this investment of about $25,000 in, which would have been like only a very small year's salary of the, you know, 2 or 3 years that he worked for so little, even at $25,000. But it's going to save us because we wouldn't be able to rent a space just for the office for anything less than $400 to $500 a month, even if it was just office space, which wouldn't give Jeff any place to live either.
But I can see, you know, I can see great potential here, Mike. I can see him pulling up at county fairs and
passing out tracks.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you're there. You see it too.
Well, let me tell you, there is one really wonderful thing about this that I think people will be excited about. But I got to tell you, there's a downside to it, and it's severe. The downside is really severe. So I want you to listen. Now, the really upside is this. Jeff could hook up his fifth wheel and arrive at your home at any time. That's wonderful. You know, you could, the next thing you know, you could hear the horn blow and there would be the pickup truck and the fifth wheel, you know, pulling up in your driveway to spend a couple of days to say hey, to have some Bible studies, anywhere in the lower 48, you know. Now, that's the good side of all of this. The bad side is Jeff could show up at your door any day.
Oh, yeah. And you could have the front end of your house, and he could have the back end of your house.
So this is the blessing and the curse all coming at the same time. So
if you have a county fair near you, a new age celebration, whatever you want, birthday parties, bar mitzvahs, circumcisions, anything you want. Who are you going to call?
Gospel Revolution.
That's right. So that's the goal for the pledge drive. I think we can reach this. I think we can get Jeff in a nice vehicle and also a fifth wheel. We just don't know what all of this looks like right now. But it's off to a good start. And in fact, I was talking to Vic Dobrindin. I was telling Vic when we were doing this, I said, Vic, I said, all I need is, I'm putting in 1,000 and all I need is 24 more people and we'll have it all done. And Vic said, well, be sure and remember me and Deb. We may want to do something.
Oh, how sweet.
And so, yeah.
That's a spirit, though, of the people we have, mate, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, they do. They want to help. If you, in fact, if any of you just wanted to compensate Jeff for the time he spent on the phone with you, we could buy him probably a pretty good size house, actually.
Yeah, I reckon.
So that's what we're doing. And we appreciate everyone participating. Thank you. I know this is just it's odd the way that this ministry has had to grow, but this ministry is totally different than anything you've ever experienced in your life. It's certainly different than anything I know of, that's for sure. But our goal is to help people, and we do things in a fashion that we think is going to be the most beneficial for everyone instead of just one or two.
Gospel Revolution.
And so it is that we must leave you, folks. We love you, one and all, and we especially thank all who, with your financial support, keep this message of grace and peace going out every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us at area code 234-564-0971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel, all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And so it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it is good night from here in Houston, Texas. And thank you guys. We love you so very much. And it's always such a pleasure to just come on here and knowing that we get to meet and get together here on this PowerCast. And we look forward to it again next week.
So remember to join us then next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Oh, it's going to be better.
Way better.
Being won and the race has been run, it's the end. Ah.
yeah, but they're usually really wonderful dreams, you know, and they there's characters, there's a plot that's it works out from the beginning all the way to the end. And I usually, though, wake up at some really wonderful part of the dream that I wish I could just go back to sleep and finish the movie, you know.
Last night, this is what I woke up dreaming, okay? And you know how you have that half time between the dreams? Yeah. So I'm in a Japanese airport. I have no freaking idea what this is about. I'm in a Japanese airport. I'm with a group, and I get a bit bored, as is my wont, and I had a look through this door, and that door led to an elevator, and the elevator led it to somewhere where people were taken off in airplanes. And I suddenly realized, maybe I should get back to my group. And I couldn't find my group. And I went down these elevators, and the elevators they weren't there when I wanted them, so I had to go down the stairs. And when I went down the stairs, I got to this total, what floor was I on anyway, and how many floors did I go up in the elevator? And I showed this Japanese person who went, oh, yeah, yeah. And I said, yes, I want to know where my group are. And they said, sorry, your plane has left. And I don't even know where I'm going, mate. And that's when I woke up. It was like, okay, Bart, that's just try to live through this day and feel good, you know?
Now.
Were you there?
Really,
were you in the other group?
Yes.
Oh, jeez. Oh, no.
Barris. I was in an airport.
Oh, man.
And trying to get, there was a group of people that I was with, and I kept getting separated from the group, and I had to go up an escalator to get to the right departure area. And then there were these little cars that would take everybody, and I would get on one and somebody else wouldn't get on, and I'd go back down to try to get to them, and they weren't there when I got back down. And it was constant. It was in airport, except this was all in Mexico. You were in Japan, and the only difference in the dreams is you were in Japan and I was in Mexico. And so then I wind up on this I'm still at the airport, but of course this is very primitive airport type things by now. And I wind up walking down the beach.
It's Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
I'm walking
a primitive
down,
airport.
Yes, I'm walking down the beach, and there's these the same stores that you would see inside the airport were along there, and I realize I'm not in a good area, and these four self-identified Bolivians come up, and they start.
No, this is so good.
They start trying to harass me, you know.
Yeah, those bad Bolivians.
And they are trying to, and I've got my brown case that I carry all the time, every place that I go, I carry this, and it's the only thing I had with me. And they are talking about stealing it. They were talking about, you know.
In English, of course.
In English,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And they said, you know, says, and besides that, says, you'll have a great story to tell about how the Bolivians.
Oh, save me. This is too, keep going. Oh, mate.
So, yeah, we were both stuck in airports last night.
I don't even know what to say to all that.